The Khatra Foundation presents the Khatra Dialogue, an exploration of the world's greatest thinkers and ideas. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of a Khatra AI. Okay, so in a world where medical science can do just incredible things, things that feel like miracles sometimes.
Absolutely, pushing boundaries constantly.
Right, but there's this really difficult truth we don't often talk about, maybe, which is, how much is one more day of life actually worth? And, you know, who gets to decide when the cost, not just the money, but the emotional cost too, is just too high?
That is such a core, uncomfortable question.
Yeah.
And it's really the heart of our deep dive today. We're getting into a really powerful memoir called The Cost of Hope.
It's by Amanda Bennett, who's a Pulitzer Prize winning journalist.
Right. And this isn't just, you know, a sad story about loss, though it is that too. It's Bennett using all her investigative skills on something incredibly personal.
Her husband, Terrence Foley, people called him Terry. He was an international consultant, a former diplomat, a really accomplished guy.
Yeah. And he had this 7-year battle with stage 4B kidney cancer, metastatic.
And Bennett basically turned her journalist's eye onto their own experience, tracking meticulously every single dollar spent alongside every moment they gained, every treatment they tried. It's this raw look at the paradoxes of modern American healthcare.
It really is. It's this blend of like deep personal grief and rigorous economic accounting.
So maybe let's start with the number that everyone talks about from the book.
No.
The figure she calculated after Terry died in 2007,
okay.
The final bill, so to speak, for those 7 years of care, aggressive, cutting edge sometimes, but ultimately not a cure.
And that number was?
$719,974.52.
Wow. Just shy of $720,000?
Yeah. And I mean, that number just hangs there. It needs context.
It absolutely does. And the first thing to understand is who they were before the illness.
Okay.
Bennett and Foley, they were, you know, these incredibly driven, successful people, met in China, lived abroad.
Right. Their life was built on being competent, being in control, thinking analytically.
Exactly. In their world, problems were things you researched, you strategized about.
Yeah.
And you solved them. That was the framework.
So when Terry gets this diagnosis in 2000, stage 4 kidney cancer, late 50s, a really grim outlook.
Yeah.
Their first instinct was basically to apply that same professional model. Like, okay, cancer is the new project. We need to master this.
Precisely. They dove in head first. A crash course in oncology, renal cell carcinoma, clinical trials, reading all the stats, the grim survival rates.
They weren't passive patients at all. They became these incredibly informed consumers, really.
Seeking out the best cancer centers, looking for any possible edge.
Mm.
Bennett even uses the phrase, they became avid consumers of the hope the medical system was offering.
They armed themselves with information, ready to commit everything they had to this fight.
And that commitment, that fight at all costs approach, it led them pretty quickly to a huge decision. A real turning point.
Which was?
The decision to go for interleukin-2 therapy, IL-2.
Oh, okay. And IL-2, that wasn't just like another chemo drug, was it?
Oh, absolutely not. No. This was, back then especially, kind of the nuclear option for kidney cancer.
We're talking brutal side effects.
Extremely brutal. It's an immunotherapy that essentially sends your system into overdrive. High fevers, massive blood pressure drops, potential organ failure. Patients often end up in the ICU just from the treatment itself.
Wow. That sounds horrific.
It is. And the kicker, the chance of it leading to a long-term lasting remission.
Was it low?
Very low, but 7%.
7%?
7% chance for that level of suffering and risk.
Exactly. And their willingness to go for it, it just perfectly shows how committed they were to fighting for survival, almost no matter the odds or the cost.
But this is where their personal battle really starts to collide with something bigger, right? The healthcare system itself.
It wasn't just the cancer they were up against. Bennett portrays the American healthcare system as this enormous, impersonal, sometimes dysfunctional machine. And a key part of that, which she really diagnosed, is what experts call perverse incentives.
Yeah, that's a crucial concept here. What does that mean in this context?
Well, basically, under the dominant model, fee-for-service hospitals and doctors often get paid more for doing more things.
Right. More tests, more procedures, more expensive drugs.
Exactly. Regardless of whether those things actually improve the patient's outcome significantly or even their quality of life.
So even for something like IL-2, with only a 7% chance of working and terrible side effects.
The system itself has a financial incentive to provide that treatment because it's complex and expensive. The momentum is always towards doing more, intervening more.
The system profits from the fight, you could say, even when the fight might be becoming futile.
Which is why Bennett's journalist brain kicking in was so vital, she needed to impose some order on this chaos.
And that led to the spreadsheet.
The famous spreadsheet of costs. Can you imagine the sheer effort? While caring for Terry, dealing with insurance, facing mortality.
She's meticulously logging every copay, every infusion cost, every hospital parking ticket.
Trying to bring her professional competence to bear on something totally overwhelming.
And that spreadsheet, it does something powerful. It takes their private agony and makes it into this, well, this damning economic report on the system.
It really forces you, the reader, to confront that question of value. She put it so well herself in the book.
What was the quote?
She wrote, "We weren't buying a cure, we were buying time. We were buying a chance."
Mm.
But what I hadn't understood is that there is a point at which the cost of the chance becomes greater than the value of the time.
Oof, that hits hard.
Yeah.
The point where the cost outweighs the benefit, even the benefit of just a chance.
Yeah. And realizing they'd passed that point, that didn't happen overnight, did it? It was a slow dawning over years.
No, it wasn't sudden. It came after years of struggle, setbacks.
Mm.
Bennett describes this one specific moment, though, a kind of shattering clarity.
Tell us about that. How did these fighters, these people who relied on control, come to terms with the idea that maybe their strategy just wasn't going to work?
She talks about walking down a hospital corridor, just exhausted, frustrated after another piece of bad news. And this thought just surfaced, uninvited, but undeniable.
What was it?
We're not going to win.
Wow.
Just that simple, devastating realization. The moment the illusion of control just broke and reality flooded in.
And that must have forced a reevaluation of everything, including how we even talk about illness.
Yes. Bennett really grapples with the language we use, the battle metaphor, the war on cancer.
Fighting the good fight, being a warrior.
Right. And she realized how toxic that can be, how it traps families.
Oh, so?
Because if illness is a war, then stopping treatment, even futile, painful treatment, feels like surrender. It feels like betrayal. Like you didn't fight hard enough.
So it pushes people towards more and more intervention, even when it's just prolonging suffering, to avoid feeling like they've given up.
Exactly. It imposes this moral weight that can be incredibly damaging.
Which makes their final major shift, their last big turning point, feel even more significant.
Absolutely. The transition to palliative care and then eventually to hospice.
And this wasn't framed as giving up, was it?
No, not at all. Bennett presents it as a conscious act of agency, a redefinition of what winning or hope even meant at that stage.
They were taking back control in a different way.
Precisely. They shifted their focus. Hope wasn't for a miracle cure anymore. It became hope for comfort, for dignity, for a peaceful end.
They chose to reclaim Terry's final days from the hospital machines.
Yeah. He died at home in 2007, surrounded by family, comfortable, not tethered to tubes in an ICU.
And there's another really powerful reflection from Bennett about that shift, isn't there?
Yes. She wrote something like, "Love doesn't always mean fighting harder. Sometimes love means accepting what we cannot change and focusing on what we can."
Hmm. Accepting limitations as an act of love. That's profound.
It really is.
Yeah.
And I think that leads to one of the core intellectual takeaways from the book, this idea of the paradox of hope.
What do you mean by that?
Well, the book shows hope isn't this fixed thing. It has to evolve during a long illness. If it doesn't, it actually causes more suffering.
So clinging to that initial hope, the hope for a total cure, against all odds,
can become a trap.
Yeah.
Especially because, as we discussed, the healthcare system is often incentivized to sell that hope, to keep treating indefinitely. Hope becomes a product.
Right. A commodity that gets monetized until the patient runs out of money or life.
But if you allow hope to mature, to change shape. Maybe hope for a good week, then hope for a pain-free day, then hope for a peaceful death.
Then you regain some control, some dignity.
Exactly. That ability to redefine hope is maybe the ultimate act of agency in that situation.
And for you listening to this, thinking about your own life or family, the big universal lesson here seems crystal clear.
Oh, absolutely. It's about having those incredibly difficult conversations about end-of-life wishes, what you really want.
Yeah, having them before you're in the middle of a crisis.
Yes. Bennett's story is almost a case study in why waiting is so dangerous once the diagnosis hits. once the fear and emotions are sky high.
Rational decision-making just goes out the window.
Pretty much. And that's when the system, with its momentum towards doing more, just takes over, makes the decisions for you, often in a way you might not have chosen in a calmer moment. Advanced directives, living wills, they're not just paperwork.
They're crucial tools for maintaining control when you're most vulnerable.
Definitely. And Bennett's achievement with this book, her professional legacy, it's really creating this hybrid thing.
Part memoir, part investigative report.
Exactly. Using her own family's incredibly painful story as data, essentially, a case study to shine a light on a massive national problem. It gave their private struggle this lasting public meaning.
It's such a testament to their love, their partnership through this ordeal. But at the same time, yeah, a devastating critique of the system they ran up against.
That collision is the core of it. Fierce personal love and commitment hitting this impersonal, often illogical, incredibly expensive medical structure.
So let's leave our listeners with that final, maybe uncomfortable thought. Amanda Bennett and Terry Foley. They were, by any measure, privileged.
Absolutely. Highly educated, professionally successful, financially comfortable, analytical minds.
They had the resources, intellectual and financial, to navigate this labyrinth better than most. They could access the best care, understand the research. And yet they still went through this incredibly difficult, agonizing, and expensive seven-year journey, spending nearly $720,000, often feeling trapped by the system's incentives, just to ultimately achieve a peaceful death at home.
So the question the book forces us to ask is, if this family, with all their advantages, faced such a struggle,
what does that imply for the millions of other families facing similar crises? Families with fewer resources, less understanding of the system, maybe less ability to advocate for themselves.
What is their experience like within this same system, facing those same impossible choices about the cost of hope?
That's the challenge, really. The unsettling question Bennett's story leaves echoing long after you finish the book.
Join us next time for a new episode. Featuring another world-renowned individual, a new book, and a new idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by A Katra Foundation.